Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States in this honorable court.
Good morning. The first case of the day is 033809, Friends of Milwaukee versus the Milwaukee Metropolitan District. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, the district court erroneously and precipitously dismissed my client's citizen suit under the Clean Water Act, holding that he lacked subject matter jurisdiction and alternatively holding that the case was barred under res judicata. These conclusions were wrong as a matter of law. The district court held that he lacked subject matter jurisdiction under Section 505 and 309G of the Clean Water Act by finding that the state authorities had commenced and were diligently prosecuting a civil action in a state court and an administrative action under a state law comparable to Section 309G. Both of these.
Can you tell us what you'd be seeking in your lawsuit that isn't available through the stipulation? What's the matter with the stipulation here, according to you?
The stipulation, we believe, is deficient in several respects, Your Honor. We believe that it fails, most importantly, to set forth any provisions for compelling compliance with the permit. After 25 or 30 years, the district is still not in compliance with the permit, and there is nothing in the stipulation.
Well, you want financial penalties. This is a public agency, though. Do you think that's appropriate in this case?
Basically,
a burden on the taxpayer.
Yes. Now, let me first say I was coming to penalties, but that was not by any means the only thing nor the first thing that I was seeking.
But there's nothing in this permit that gives the green light to violations of the statutory standards. The permit, or the stipulation, I should say, is designed to cause the district to build the facilities that would be necessary to allow compliance. And the permit itself is something that's a legally enforceable document.
What has given the green light to permit violations is the failure of enforcement by the district over the past years. And we would have said this if we were discussing the stipulation that was entered in 1977. And they would have pointed to 1994 as the banner date way off in the future when the deep tunnel would open and all the problems would be solved. The problem is, as the Wisconsin Legislative Audit Bureau found, that didn't solve the problem in 1994, and the district has dumped almost 1 billion gallons of sewage, raw sewage, into the rivers and lake between 1994, after the tunnel opened,
right,
and the filing.
We're in a forward-looking mode right now. There's a 2002 stipulation, and it seems to me, I'm sure reasonable people could disagree about whether the measures in that stipulation will be enough to do the job. But a disagreement in technique isn't the same thing as a statement that the state authorities are not diligently pursuing remedies.
We absolutely agree, Your Honor. But we were precluded by these erroneous findings of lack of jurisdiction and res judicata from pursuing our discovery and presenting our evidence that what is going on is faulty enforcement by the district.
Let's look at the absolute bottom line here, and that is, isn't everyone better off if the state of Wisconsin requires the district to spend large sums of money on increasing its capacity to handle more sewage rather than paying out these large fines?
Well, we're not asking for large fines particularly, and there are lots of creative ways to address that issue. We could be talking about stipulated penalties for failure to meet dates and targets in the future. There are none here. So we're not here demanding civil penalties strictly and only. We're talking about setting up a framework for making sure that what happens in the future goes forward in an effective enforcement basis.
Although I really would like to talk about the future, I am very interested in why the plaintiffs didn't move to intervene in the Dane and Milwaukee County State Court action.
Because, Your Honor, we had a federal lawsuit on file first, which was a prior pending action, and we had our federal rights to pursue in that action. We preferred that forum.
But I had a problem with the way you filed the suit. Yes. It sounds to me from reading everything that there had been an understanding on both sides, nothing would be filed before, if I remember, the 15th of March, and you zipped into court at very early in the morning, and in that circumstance, they did file later on in the same day. It's not as though you really, in a sense, had filed first, and then 2 hours later, it just happens that the state files. There was this sort of Oklahoma land rush mood to the thing.
Your Honor, I've been litigating for 25 years, and I cannot tell you how many times a case has ended up in Illinois or New York or somewhere because of this Oklahoma land rush. Now, if you want to talk about the manner in which proceedings were taken here, what I suggest you do is look back a little bit further in time to when we filed our 60-day notice, and they suddenly the DNR wrote for the first time in all these years a letter saying, we think that there's a violation going on here.
But is it true that you requested that the plaintiffs withhold filing suit until March 15th? Is that so?
And they did and we did.
But, to then argue to us that the state didn't diligently prosecute it because it waited until March 15th is disingenuous.
That's not what we're arguing at all.
You're just trying to get the benefit of the first filed suit rule, and I don't disagree with you that it happens often that people will jockey for position, but I just don't see any equities in this situation that would tend to favor you over the state. It seems to me it's effectively a case of simultaneous filing.
Allow me to finish my presentation, which is we filed a notice. All of a sudden, they sent a letter very similar to the Friends of the Earth versus Laidlaw case. On the 59th day, without ever talking to us, they run into court in Dane County where there isn't even a live complaint, and they file a stipulation. And it's only by the graces of the judge up there who said, this case is 25 years old, I'm not entering this stipulation, that we were ever even brought into the conversation, because they didn't tell us they were going to do that, and they didn't tell us about that until after it was done.
So what's the purpose of the 60-day period in the statute? Isn't it precisely to allow the state to wake up and smell the coffee and do something finally?
Absolutely, but the wake up and smell the coffee is to goad them into action, not to goad them into putting together a settlement that will elbow out the citizens and allow business as usual between a regulator and a regulatee that have been doing business for a very long time. Now, the fact of the matter is...
Specifically, is the mismanagement that you're alleging here?
Well, we think there are a number of issues pertaining to mismanagement. One has to do with the policy for how they fill the tunnel in rainy seasons, by not filling it with combined sewer overflow, because they're saving in case of sanitary sewer overflow. We think there are problems with the manner in which they're enforcing the infiltration and inflow issues that are really political, that have to do with the various suburbs. That's a very substantial problem. In this stipulation, they're only calling for a 5% decrease, which is a very small decrease over what's possible, and that's a political issue. But what I'd like to turn back to is this question of equities, because there are no equities here. We filed first, jurisdiction vested, and as Justice Scalia noted in Gwaltney, once jurisdiction vests, then that's what you look at is the time of the filing.
Well, tell me this, how much control do you believe citizens should have over the regulatory process? In other words, let's say that the government was imposing fines on the district for violations of the act, but the citizens of Wisconsin didn't think the fines were high enough. could they file their own action claiming lack of diligence in a case like that?
They could file, and then there would be, presumably, if it was done right, like it was in the Laidlaw case and several other cases, some discovery, and then there'd be an adjudication on that. But here there was never any discovery, and there was no adjudication. I mean, it was a simple case of the district court saying, well, he didn't even rule on the basis of the Milwaukee County case, because that was after filed, but he said there's this Dane County judicial action, which really didn't exist. And when the judge in the Dane County said to them, if you can cite me some authority for the proposition that I still have jurisdiction, they didn't even follow up with authority. That's not diligent prosecution. So then it falls back to the administration, the administrative remedies. And there we know that there is no comparable law, because Wisconsin, the DNR, has no administrative penalty authority, period. It has to go to court. It does not have 309G authority. It has only 309D authority, and 309G is very specific about the proceedings have to be under this subsection 309. So there is no preclusive effect.
What could you come up with in discovery? This situation has been going on for a long time, and you appear to have quite a lot of expertise in the operation of the deep tunnel and so on. Why did you need discovery?
We need discovery, first of all, for a variety of reasons. As I point out, there has to be some airing so that the public and the court can understand why, for instance, the DNR would target a figure as low as 5% for the reduction of I&I. And that's just a situation in which we feel that perhaps the DNR and the district are submitting to the political will of some suburbs that they shouldn't be submitting to. And if a federal court were involved, as the Clean Water Act indicates and allows, at the behest of a citizen suit, and penalties were available, not talking about assessing back penalties either necessarily, but a stipulated penalty, that gives the district some reason, some greater motivation to address an issue like I&I.
What kind of penalties? You say not high penalties. What are you thinking?
Well, what I'm saying is that we're not here simply clamoring that we want blood from the district, that we want money. What we're saying is we want accountability. We need more better management.
But surely you have some idea when you talk about.
Well, I've seen situations like the Kodak case where it's been $1 million or more, and even after the payment of $1 million or more in Kodak, the court found that the citizenship should go forward.
Well, are you uncomfortable giving?
I am very uncomfortable giving you a figure. We haven't had discovery. At this point, no. But you send me back down and let me do some discovery, and I'll come back and tell you what I think.
Is that a promise?
Yes, I think.
But I wanted to pause for a moment on the res judicata point, because you argue that your citizen group is, in fact, in a sense, a different party from the state. And there are a number of opinions that really say, in terms of identity of interest for preclusion purposes, citizen groups who are acting as private attorneys general do stand in the same shoes as the state. I'm thinking of the Second Circuit's case and Atlantic States Legal Foundation, some other cases. And I'm troubled with the notion that if the state is doing something, that the citizens groups can come in as an adversary, in a sense, of the state, as opposed to functionally both on the same side. And if the citizens group is the same as the state, we need to reach that ground of Judge Kliver's opinion as well.
I agree. And I don't think that that's the situation. I think the Congress drafted a comprehensive federal statute in which it laid out very clearly what the preclusive effect should be of litigation, and they said that that the government can stop a citizen suit by filing first and prosecuting diligently, not by filing last and settling fast. The fact of the matter is that there are a number of situations in which Congress has created statutes and allowed for state or federal and private enforcement to exist side by side. We cite the Sam Fox case and the Colby case from this court on antitrust and the EEOC. And it's important to understand that that Congress is very concerned not only about getting them started, but making sure that when they get started, they do an effective job of regulating. That's the point of diligent prosecution. If you have an after-filed suit and you apply res judicata, you don't even have the diligent prosecution standard, because res judicata is a theory that's based on the opportunity to litigate, not the fact that litigation was done diligently. And diligent prosecution is a different standard from the fraud or collusion standard that would negate a res judicata conclusion. It's
right.
A stricter standard.
But you could have a situation where, I realize you're getting into your rebuttal time, but let me just throw this out for you.
We should finish the
You could have a situation where Congress has defined where the identity of citizen group and state finally falls apart, where as long as the state is diligently prosecuting it, it is more or less the same as the citizen group. At least it is the same for preclusion purposes, but if the state is failing the diligent prosecution standard, at that point it becomes rather clear, just like, you know, in demand situations for derivative actions or whatever, there comes a point where you can see that the interests have diverged. And I wonder if that's how this statute should be seen.
Well, I think, first of all, clearly the interests have diverged if what they tried to do was muscle us out by a 59-day stipulation where there wasn't even an active complaint. But be that as it may, I think that the Second Circuit's Kodak and Pan America Tanning cases reflect an appropriate way to look at the context of an after-filed government suit being settled first, and that is, does this, the Dakota court said, so long as the settlement reasonably assures that the violations in the citizen suits have ceased and will not recur, but if it doesn't, then the citizen suit may proceed. And in this case, I think it's very clear that the violations have not ceased. I mean, even in the record, there's post-filing sanitary sewer overflows. So this would not be a case under that formulation where there would be preclusion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Levenstam. Mr. Carriker?
Good morning.
May it please the court. Your Honor, MMSD believes that it's entitled to the deference that is afforded under the Clean Water Act to manage the enforcement of the Clean Water Act performance of it. I'm sorry.
The basic reality here, though, is that these plaintiffs started the ball rolling here. Nothing else would have happened, would it, if they hadn't written this, given you this 60-day notice?
Well, on the contrary, there were things happening before the notice letter was sent, but in fact, if the notice...
What was happening before that?
Oh, well, there was a report that had been filed by the DNR regarding sanitary sewer overflows. There had been meetings and discussions between the state regulators and MMSD and EPA to discuss the situation of the sanitary sewer overflows. But I would also say that if the letter was what goaded the state into engaging in more enforcement activity, then that's exactly what the Act provided for.
But Mr. Carriker, which lawsuit, in terms of the first filed rule that Mr. Levenstam was emphasizing, is the one we should look at? Because this Dane County suit had just been dormant for a very long period of time. Maybe there wasn't a final order in the file saying this suit is hereby terminated, but nothing was happening. And so if that can count as the state's action going all the way back to the 70s, it doesn't seem consistent with the structure of this statute. And if you're relying on the Dane County suit, then rightly or wrongly, after midnight on the 15th of March, anybody could have filed. So which one do you say is the pending action the state has?
Well, actually, either.
There's a problem with each one of them, the dormancy problem that I just mentioned with Dane County and the after-file problem with Milwaukee. What if we threw them both out?
Well,
where would
you be? I think the dormancy problem, as you call it, is cured by the fact that there had been recent activity, including the filing of the stipulation in Dane County, that there was activity ongoing by the state to pressure, if you will, or to bring the MMSD into compliance and to deal with the Clean Water Act issues. So I think the pendency of that case, where the Dane County Court had jurisdiction and then there was a stipulation filed, that in and of itself was a first filed action, if you will.
So the last compliance date was, what, 94 or something like that?
No, that's not correct. There were, actually, compliance was being monitored all the way through the late 90s. In 1997, for example, MMSD asked that the lawsuit be dismissed, and the state refused to do so.
How many SSOs have there been since 1994?
I couldn't answer that question, Your Honor. I know that there have been
two in the last two years.
Yes.
When you say the last 2 years, you mean on this record? Do you mean up to 2004 in March?
No, I don't mean on the record. I'm not certain of what the record provides for the number. But I know that the number of SSOs had decreased by 93% from the time that enforcement activity began in the Dane County action until the time that new enforcement activity was started to try and finish, if you will, the job that was started in the Dane County stipulation to try and resolve forever this question of SSOs from the Milwaukee system.
Litigation-wise, this goes back to what the Illinois lawsuits in the 70s. I mean, maybe there was litigation before that. I don't know. But.
Well, I think the first action that's important for our case is the 1977 Dane County suit. And that's when the first stipulation was filed, and that's when the enforcement activity began.
But is the MMSD claiming that the SSO events that are at issue here occurred due to emergent situations?
Yes, in some cases there are.
What were the emergencies?
Well, there's an allegation in the briefs of the plaintiffs that somehow the SSOs occurred, or that we have conceded that there was somehow violation of the act. On the contrary, the times when it have occurred have either been because of an equipment malfunction or some problem such as an equipment malfunction, which would be referred to as a dry weather SSO. And then wet weather SSOs, when there's an emergent situation in the sense that there's a sudden severe rainfall, which is unable to be handled without a backup into homes. And what the MMSD has decided is that rather than have water and sewage back up into homes and cause damage to homes, that in those events, which are emergent, they are required to have an outflow or an outfall, which would be an SSO.
Well, why shouldn't the district have paid a fine for example, when its contractor accidentally discharged sewage when the deep tunnel was not at capacity?
Well, that's within the discretion of the DNR and the Department of Justice in Wisconsin, Your Honor. They have determined that fines and penalties with respect to MMSD are less desirable, less effective than remedial measures such as those that are included in the stipulation that was ultimately entered in the Milwaukee County case.
But the problem is that stipulation comes along so late. I mean, I really do have trouble describing the almost 20 years worth of proceedings in Dane County as the diligent prosecution when these problems were certainly severe as of the time the 2002 stipulation comes into play.
Well, they were certainly markedly less severe than they had been in the past, Your Honor.
Well, but where in the Clean Water Act does it say good enough is okay? I mean, you have these permits and you're supposed to meet the permits.
Clearly, and that's everything the MMSD has done has been to try and meet its permit. It doesn't enter into a permit renewal, for example, as it did a few years ago with the purpose of abating it or somehow violating it. On the contrary, they try and work with the regulators to come up with a fair and reasonable interpretation of what their responsibilities are, and then they do everything they can to adhere to that. And that's what they have.
But what are the consequences for failure? The consequences for failure appear to be nothing until these citizens came along and put additional pressure to fix the situation.
Well, on the contrary, the consequences have been almost constant monitoring and enforcement and requirements of facilities plans to be implemented and new public works projects to be undertaken. It's not as though there was this big gap as the deep tunnel went into place, and then the MMSD somehow sat back on its hands and said, okay, now we're fine, we don't have to do anything anymore.
But what about violations of the Act that occur after the 2002 stipulations? Are the citizens barred forever from filing an action for unlawful discharges?
No, I don't believe so.
So you think they could send you another letter tomorrow that says, we don't think the 2002 stipulation is going to do it, you have 60 days to show us otherwise, or we're going to file suit?
No, I think as of SSOs or alleged violations that occurred prior to the date that the stipulation was entered into, I think those are
resolved. But they have alleged that there have been some afterwards. I recall August 2002, for example, and for all I mean, it's been a while since August 2002, and I presume in such a letter they may be collecting data for things that aren't in this record. If there were such events, why couldn't they file a letter tomorrow?
Well, I think they could. For something that happened after the stipulation occurred, they could file a letter, and then there would have to be a determination as to whether or not that alleged violation had been diligently prosecuted. I don't think there's anything that cuts off forever the rights of the citizens going forward to somehow be involved in this process.
What's the response to their claim that the 2002 stipulation still lacks the requirement that the MMSD comply with its own permit in the Act?
I don't understand that, because there's absolutely nothing in the stipulation that relieves the MMSD from the responsibility to comply with the permit and the Clean Water Act. It's interesting on this point. In the appendix, you'll see in our appendix, in the separate appendix, there's a letter that was sent by the plaintiffs making suggestions on the stipulation before it was actually entered. And one of the things that they suggested themselves was that there would be somewhat of a grace period, if you will, where there was compliance by a certain date, but compliance wasn't required until that date. And they attached a proposed or a draft or an example stipulation from the Jacksonville, Florida, which had such a grace period in it. This stipulation that we're dealing with here, the Milwaukee County stipulation, does not have a grace period. So from the date that stipulation was entered, if something happened the following day, the government was perfectly capable of doing whatever it needed to do to move forward on those alleged violations. So
what stands in the way of settlement now?
What issues are barred
to settlement?
Well, I think, Judge, that the record reflects that there has never been a suggestion by the appellants of anything that is a technical solution. They haven't come in and said, somehow you don't understand the technology, or you should be doing something different from a technological standpoint.
Well, they said they never had the opportunity to develop that information.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Levinson was saying they have not had the opportunity to develop that information.
Oh, on the contrary, Your Honor. They have had access to all kinds of materials. This discovery point is interesting.
What materials have you given them access to, or what materials are public?
All of the files of the DNR are public and are available
for access.
In other
words, what you're saying is they don't need discovery because there's nothing left to discover?
Yes. The only thing that they requested below was depositions of the public officials. They didn't request documents. They had all the documents in the files that they possibly could have wanted. All they asked for was depositions of those people. And frankly, Your Honor, we don't see how that would have enlightened the question of whether there was diligent prosecution.
Why?
Because everything that was done...
These officials don't have any idea about what's going on?
No, but all the acts that they did were undertaken in writing. They were put into stipulations and letters back and forth and communications that took place.
Every single thing has been done in writing?
Well, I couldn't represent that to you. But
shouldn't they get a shot at these officials?
Well, they haven't shown any suggestion that there was prejudice to them because of it. Mr. Levinson today is the first time that I've heard him suggest or seen the plaintiffs suggest in any of their written materials that somehow that there was prejudice as a result of them failing to get it. They certainly didn't press or ask multiple times to Judge Clavert. The whole matter pended for months in the district court before the decision was rendered. There wasn't any kind of a renewal of the motion. The argument took place, same thing. I think the record shows that this idea that somehow there's information that they had to have in order to do a good job of challenging the diligent prosecution of the state is something that's come up, is something that's new.
But isn't the key question here, in a sense, how are these state officials, and for that matter EPA, but we'll leave them out off because they're not your clients, how are they exercising their discretion? You know, there's data that comes in about overflows and about events that happen, and then some public official has to decide, are they going to take a punitive step against MMSD? Are they going to go revise the stipulation, require building of some different or additional facilities? What are they going to do? Or are they going to sit around and have meetings, you know, and talk about it? And if they have meetings forever, then maybe nothing's happening out there in the real world. And that it's that exercise of discretion one might get a window into, I think.
Yes. I guess, Your Honor, that the Clean Water Act vests that discretion with the state. I don't think there's anything in the record that suggests that it was not exercised in good faith. I don't think this is the case.
Well, there can't be anything in the record if they haven't had an opportunity to depose those individuals who exercise the authority, can they?
Yeah, I don't see how a deposition of a public official under those circumstances would be enlightening to the question of whether or not what has been done, the enforcement action that has been taken, is diligent. Because we're not judging what the motives or what was in the regulator's heads. What we're judging is what was done, and is what was done.
But often,
what
is done is because of what was in someone's head.
But what we're judging, what it is that has been done, are the acts that have been taken by the state prior to the filing of the lawsuit sufficient to show that there was diligent prosecution, that there was enforcement activity being undertaken, that the enforcement power that had been vested in the state was actually being exercised. It's that Gwaltney said, Your Honor, that what the court should look at is not the particular method or the timing of what the regulator has chosen, but rather look at the discretion that's vested in that they are actually taking action. And action has been undertaken. And I want to go back, Judge Wood, to one of your earlier points, and that is it's not as though there was a dead time between the last request by MMSD in 1997 to ask that the St. County case be dismissed and the notice of intent to sue. I mean, the record has information that shows that there was almost constant activity. There was monitoring, there was a new facilities plan that was entered into by MMSD, and under those circumstances, I think there was activity. I also should go back to say that...
a certain amount of politics in this question, will you?
I'm sorry?
You wouldn't deny that there's a certain amount of politics in this.
Well, certainly there are people of both political persuasions who are certainly interested in the lawsuit. I also want to go back and say that I'm not relying solely on the Dane County case as the basis for diligent prosecution, because I think that the timing of the filing, as the court pointed out in the questions to Mr. Levenstam, shows that there was a request for deferral, a deferral was granted, and the fact that the citizens ran in at 7:57 on that morning and beat the state to the courthouse should not be dispositive. This is not like the cases where a short window of time has somehow been dispositive.
I'm going to give you two extra minutes, and then I'm going to give Mr. Levenstam two extra minutes. And I am a bit troubled about the district court's view of res judicata. Merely because the citizens were acting in the capacity of private attorney general, the district court seemed to think that meant that they were in privity, and that means res judicata. And the provision wouldn't have any meaning, it seems to me, if private citizens were considered to be in privity with the government merely because they're acting as private attorney general. So maybe you can help me with that.
Well, I have to say that we agree with Judge Clavert's interpretation. The interests that are sought to be vindicated by the citizens are the same interests that are sought to be vindicated by the state.
Isn't that a contradiction, though, in a case of provision for a citizen suit in these circumstances? The only reason there's a provision for it is the assumption that the public body isn't doing a good job, I think.
Well, I don't think that the fact that, let's say the citizens legitimately won the race to the courthouse and there was no Dane County action and they were there first, you know, I don't think that that means that then the citizens are the captain of the litigation and the captain of enforcement from then on.
But that's the whole problem with your view, because if Judge Clavert's position on privity is right, then the state could file 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And if the state action finished first, the normal rule and preclusion is the action that finishes first is the one that precludes any other action where the parties are same and the claim is the same, et cetera, et cetera. But we know that's not the case under this statute, so we have to do something different.
I would go back to Gwaltney, because I think the idea from Gwaltney is that the state is always the party that has the primary enforcement responsibility. And so if that's the case, just because the state loses the race to the courthouse shouldn't mean that the citizens from then on out get to drive how the process is resolved. And if the state comes in and they prosecute these violations or alleged violations, they come up with a resolution and they obtain a judgment like was obtained here, which covered all of the claims that were submitted by the citizens, all of the dates and the events that could be the subject of violation, all was covered in the stipulation. When they come in and they require $1 billion worth of work and resolve it, the state
has... Well, the race judicata issue is whether you're adequately representing their interests, I think.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the theory here is that you're not. If they had to come in, that there's a contradiction, it seems,
well,
to me,
I think
applying race judicata to this kind of situation.
I would argue that the fact that we were as late as you say is not reflective of a failure to adequately represent the interests of the citizens in the enforcement action. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Mr. Levenstam, you're going to get 2 more minutes.
To answer your question earlier on, there have been, after 1994 and before the filing of this suit, over 50 sanitary sewer overflows, which are the base of which are listed in our First Amendment complaint.
How about this business about what's the last compliance date in the Madison?
My understanding is that the final date for which anything had to be done actually under that stipulation was 95 or 96. There was some back and forth between the parties, the DNR and the district, about whether to dismiss the case or not, but regardless of that, the court certainly didn't in Dane County think that it still had a live matter going when they came up there and tried to get this thing filed. What happens, the problem is that when you leave this entirely to the discretion of the district and the DNR, you have exchanges like what happened here. After our notice letter, and the DNR sent a letter saying there are violations, the district wrote back and said, well, we don't think they're violations. And the DNR's response to that was, in a letter that's at Supplemental Appendix 42, what we need to do is agree to disagree on this. I know Martha Stewart would have loved to have a regulator take that reaction, but that's part of the problem that we have, where a stipulation doesn't even say you've got to reach compliance with your permit. And this stipulation has a specific provision in it for amending it to extend out to the 2020 facilities plan. So we could be going on for another 20 years from here with still no requirement in a stipulation that there be compliance with the permit.
So why isn't that redundant? I worried about that argument of yours. Surely the permit doesn't say this is optional. The EPA can't have sunk that low. And
the reason it's not redundant, Your Honor, is because the permit is not being enforced. And if the permit were being enforced, or if the injunction said you have to reach, or the stipulation said you have to reach compliance, if you don't reach compliance when there are sanitary sewer overflows, henceforth, there's going to be a stipulated penalty provision.
So you may have, in a sense, the stipulation to boldface and underline the language of the permit somehow.
Yes. Well, just like oftentimes an injunction will be there to enforce a judgment. The judgment exists. The law is clear, but the injunction is there because then there's ready recourse to the court, and it has several procedural implications as well as substantive implications. So I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, I would... Do you have a further question, Your Honor?
Did you ask about taking depositions when you were...
Yes. Yes, we wrote a letter to them and said we wanted depositions of several people. And then they filed a protective order. We opposed the protective order. We asked in the oral argument on the dismissal motion for discovery and explained why. And it was the protective order motion was then held moot on the ruling of the dismissal.
Well, thank you, one and all, for fine briefs and a fine argument. Very appreciative. And the case will be taken under advisement.